This is Science Friday. I'm John Dankosky. These days, if you want to be an indie musician or an indie filmmaker, it's a well-trod path. You find some like-minded collaborators, you upload your dream project to Kickstarter or Indiegogo, and then you ask the crowd to fund it. It doesn't hurt that making a movie or cutting a record gets cheaper and cheaper every year. You know, a couple thousand bucks should do it. But let's say you want to be an indie scientist. You want to do research outside of a traditional university or industry lab. Will the crowd fund basic research? Today, we'll ask what science might be able to crib from the indie playbook. Let me introduce our next guest. Ethan Perlstein is an evolutionary pharmacologist, a self-identified indie scientist, and the founder of the Perlstein Lab in San Francisco. Welcome to the show.
Hi, John. Thank you for having me.
And Cindy Wu is the co-founder of Experiment.com, a crowdfunding website specifically for scientific research projects. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
And if you're interested in crowdfunded science yourself, you can give us a call at 844-724-8255. That's 844-SCI-TALK. So, Ethan, you refer to yourself as an indie scientist. What exactly do you mean?
Yeah, so I think the analogy here is obviously to the indie artists, and I think the real strength of that analogy is that as an indie scientist, you have to worry about branding, messaging, and community management. And if you are a scientist in a traditional setting like an academic lab, you have the affiliation of the university to sort of do that for you. But to be an indie scientist, you have to create that yourself. And with social media tools and the internet at sort of writ large, one is able to actually do that.
Branding and messaging, how good are scientists at that?
Well, I think maybe they're probably better than they think they are. I think scientists get used to talking to their peers in a certain specific language with certain specific jargon. But I think scientists actually are able to communicate sort of more broadly. They talk to their friends. They tell their parents what they're up to. So I think it's really about a mindset, and it's possible.
So what pushed you in this direction? What was the problem you were trying to solve?
Well, the problem, it's sort of trying to solve my own problem, and I think a problem of a lot of people my age. So I'm 34, about to turn 35, part of Gen Y and the millennials. And as young scientists, I think we're getting particularly squeezed in terms of the traditional academic track. I call it the post-ocalypse, but essentially what you have is this oversupply of professionally trained scientists and not enough academic jobs available for which they were ostensibly trained. So there's this tremendous pressure on that front, and there's also a tremendous pressure on the funding side in terms of budgets. Federal budgets that support grant work is also on the decline. So there's just a general atmosphere of intense hyper-competition and pressure on young scientists.
Wait, there's a surplus of scientists? I thought America didn't have enough scientists.
Well, in the sense that there are, I think the bigger question is, how many scientists can the world support? I mean, that's a separate question. I think the real question we're facing right now is that there are just a certain number of academic jobs that are made available every year. And, you know, any given lab in the United States tends to have a lot of graduate students and postdocs. And it's really, well beyond the one-to-one replacement situation. So you've got a lab producing a lot of trainees, and they all sort of want to be like their boss, but there's just simply not enough positions to absorb them.
Okay, so Cindy, tell us about Experiment.com. How did this come about?
Yeah, so I started Experiment.com with my co-founder, Denny Luan, when we were both undergraduates at the University of Washington. And initially, what we wanted to build is a website that we would use. So at the time, we had just published a research paper where we designed a potential anthrax therapeutic and won the largest synthetic biology competition at MIT called iGEM. And I found that we could use the same antibiotic that we designed as an antibiotic for more generic bacterial infections. But when I asked my professor where I could get maybe $5,000 to $10,000 to do these preliminary studies, he basically said that because I don't have a PhD and because I'm not a tenured professor, there are no avenues for me to apply for grant funding. And so that's where the idea came about.
So were you getting a lot of people telling you this was going to work, or people saying, people aren't going to crowdfund science like that?
So people were skeptical, and they didn't really, all the scientists understood that if we built this platform that they would use it, but we weren't sure whether or not people wanted to give directly to science. And so the best way to test it was to design and build the website within 3 months and launch it and see what would happen. And we launched with 9 professors and graduate students at the University of Washington and funded 6 out of those 9 within the first 2 months.
So tell us more about who uses Experiment.com and how much are they trying to raise each?
So the youngest person was a high school student that was 16, and the oldest researcher that's used the platform was 83, a professor at USC. So we have professors graduate students, postdocs, independent scientists all using the platform. The average project is around $5,000, but we've had researchers raise up to $30,000.
And Ethan, is that kind of the sweet spot, the amount of money that people are trying to raise who want to be indie scientists?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good amount of starter money so that you can get validation for your idea and then be able to shop that around for, you know, basically to deeper pockets.
A couple of years ago, Ethan, you raised $25,000 on the crowdfunding site Rocket Hub for a project you called Crowdfunding a Meth Lab. What was the purpose of that project?
Yeah, so this was in 2012, and I was realizing that I was probably on my way out of academia and heard about crowdfunding in part from experiment.com and others, and thought it would be a really cool idea to try to take advantage of this platform. So we raised $25,000 in collaboration with Daniel Krawczyszewski and Professor David Solzer at Columbia Med School, where the collaboration is still ongoing. But for me, it was really an opportunity to try to start branding myself and to start to make this transition out of academia into this new world.
Could you tell us a little bit more about this experiment you were trying to fund? It sounds like the sort of thing that might get people at least interested.
Sure. So the idea here was that when I was in academia, I was interested in psychopharmacology, so how psychiatric disease drugs work. And so I had done a lot of work on yeast and using yeast as a model to study these molecules. I knew that I needed to translate those insights into, you know, mammalian cells or into a mammal, into a higher organism. So I hooked up with David Solzer at Columbia to try to explore that because his lab was especially interested in studying amphetamines, which are not the drugs that we were looking at. We were looking at antidepressants, but it sort of belonged to the same family of drugs. So we were looking to do an experiment where we wanted to try to identify where exactly inside the cells these psychoactive molecules are accumulating.
So tell us a bit more about the lessons you learned from this experience, because, I mean, you're able to raise the money, the $25,000, but that only gets you so far. What are some things you learned that you're moving forward into this indie world?
Yeah, I think one of the principal lessons is trying to understand what does the crowd actually want from this, because it's one thing to talk about, well, people want to donate because they see that basic science is under siege, and so they want to advance that. Some people want to support a project because they care about that specific question. So I think for me, the real value of that experience was actually getting out there and using Twitter, using the blog to communicate and get feedback from people to understand what do they want to know. Do they want to know how science is progressing day by day? It can be very slow. It can be very frustrating. It can be very, you know, one step forward, two steps back. So it was a really interesting experience to understand what does the crowd actually expect and want from scientists.
If you have questions about indie science, 844-724-8255. That's 844-SCI-TALK. Let's go to Megan, who's calling from Raleigh, North Carolina. Hi there, Megan.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well. What's on your mind?
Well, my question is more about indie science and maybe more as the direction in which this movement might head. I am an indie social scientist. I'm not affiliated with the university. And my biggest hurdle when I'm trying to plan or initiate a research study is IRB, or Institutional Review Board, approval. How do indie scientists, how will they circumvent the need for IRB approval, or how do you see this movement affecting IRB in the future?
Thanks for the question. Cindy, you want to take a crack at that?
Yeah, so currently the projects that need an IRB on experiment, most of them are from the university, but I think that what's going to happen in the future is there's going to be a much more streamlined process to acquiring an IRB, and we actually plan to be a part of that in the future.
I'm wondering quickly, Ethan, if you can talk a little bit more about what goes into writing a grant versus what goes into all the marketing that you were talking about before. It seems like an awful lot of work for a scientist to be, you know, tweeting and going on Facebook and trying to raise money him or herself. But there's an awful lot of work that goes into writing a traditional grant, and the odds aren't really all that good of getting that either.
It's true. I mean, you can't simply repurpose a grant application that didn't succeed and slap it on, you know, experiment.com or you know, any other crowdfunding site and expect people to actually either understand it or to care about it. So you have to translate. But again, as I said in the beginning, you know, every scientist, unless they come from a family of only scientists, they're interacting with friends and family who don't do that. And so they have those skills to be able to communicate. They just have to realize what the appropriate language is for the audience they're looking at. So I think they can't just, again, recycle the language and the nomenclature and the jargon. They have to figure out a way to translate it.
I want to bring another guest into the conversation. Dan Jaffe is a professor of atmospheric sciences at the University of Washington, Bothell. He's currently in the middle of his second experiment.com campaign. Welcome to Science Friday, Dr. Jaffe.
Thank you very much for having me, John.
So you're a professor who's gotten grants from NOAA and NASA and the EPA and the NSF. So why are you crowdfunding?
Well, crowdfunding can be a source of funding where the traditional agencies don't want to come through. And I think it was important what Ethan said, that there really is a crisis of science funding in this country. I know so many scientists who spend a lot of time writing grants, and that's a lot of wasted potential. In my case, we're responding to a major environmental project proposed here in Washington State, and the traditional agencies were not able or not willing to fund research associated with the environmental implications of what that project was going to do. That's the major coal export terminals that are being proposed here in Washington.
The fact is that this is something that you didn't think you'd get traditional funding for, but people wanted to rally to make this a reality. Is that right?
That's right. And I think that's an important point, is you really have to identify an audience and a group of committed individuals and people, not just a small number, but a lot of people, and use a variety of tools and media and Twittering to get the word out and identify who that audience is that's really going to support your project, whether it be with $10 donations or $1,000 donations. You need everybody, and you really need to identify that audience.
So how much are you asking for, and do you think you're going to make the goal?
Well, in the first project, we raised about $20,000 by the crowdfunding via experiment.com, and we managed to complete our first study in 2013 and then published a paper in the peer-reviewed literature. We're working on our second one now. We've targeted $12,000 for a second round of work, looking at implications of coal transport on trains here in Washington State. Well, I'm optimistic, yes. I think we'll make the goal. We have to do our work to get the word out there and let people know that this is happening. And I think there's enough people who are interested in understanding what the environmental implications are of this project that I'm optimistic.
So it seems obvious in some ways that people in a community might get behind funding a science project looking at air quality or water quality in their neighborhood. But do you think, Dan, that there's a will there to crowdfund, you know, the basic science, the stuff that's a little bit more esoteric that maybe the public doesn't understand so well?
That is going to be challenging. That is definitely going to be challenging. And that's where I would say that I don't see us using crowdfunding to buy a new mass spectrometer or a new, instrument that's going to cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. But in our case, where we have an established lab, where we are able to do projects with undergraduates and relatively modest scale that are going to have a big impact on public policy, I think that's the kind of place, that's a sweet spot for me with crowdfunding.
Dan Jaffe is a professor of atmospheric sciences at the University of Washington, Bothell. You can read more about his research at experiment.com. Thanks so much for joining us, Dan.
Thank you.
I'm John Dankosky, and this is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. And we're talking with Ethan Perlstein. He's an evolutionary pharmacologist, an independent scientist, and the founder of Perlstein Lab. Cindy Wu is the co-founder of the crowdfunding website experiment.com. We're talking about turning to the crowd to fund science. Let's go to Jeff, who is calling from Brooklyn. Hi there, Jeff. Go ahead. You're on Science Friday.
Thanks. Yeah, I have a couple questions. I guess my first question that comes to mind, I've actually funded a few Kickstarter campaigns, and typically, if you're funding, let's say, a product, new technology, you'll get, a product in the mail as a thank you for funding. And if you're doing an art project, like a movie or a book, you might actually get a copy or a producer credit. I'm wondering if you guys in the scientific field, to raise money, sort of offer incentives, for lack of a better word, in order to get funding. And if I may ask a second question, isn't this also the domain, medical research, where people should get tax breaks or tax receipts for making a donation? And is that something you guys currently offer?
Well, those are two good questions. So Cindy, first of all, what do you send people who want to fund a project on experiment.com? They get a T-shirt?
So on experiment.com, there are no tangible rewards. What happens is the scientists share the research process directly with the donors through lab notes. So, for example, we had one project that just shared a lab note yesterday where they were testing a cancer drug on Ebola, and they just posted a lab note that showed the data of their last three trials, and they now have preliminary data to move the project forward. So what the donors are really looking for is progress in answering that research question.
So an important piece of this, though, is open data. And in this particular site, this way of funding science, that's very implicit, that you're going to get the data, you're going to see what's being found out along the way. That's a very important part of experiment.com.
Yeah, so the scientists, they can choose what they want to share, so that expectations are always set by the scientist himself or herself. So we encourage all the scientists to publish everything openly, but at the end of the day, it's up to them.
Ethan, is open access an important part of this whole thing?
I think so. And I think, I mean, open access in the traditional definition means publishing in a journal where there is no paywall and anyone can click and read the paper. But I think there's also this broader movement called open science, which doesn't just wait for the publication step to disseminate information. It involves people, scientists, blogging and tweeting in real time, letting the world know how their research is sort of inching along bit by bit.
We just have a couple minutes left. The other question that our caller had about whether or not these donations could be tax deductible. I don't know if this is all baked into what you're doing here, Cindy. I mean, I know that there's a lot of different things you probably have to consider when you're considering getting money from people all over the internet, including big and small gifts.
Yeah. So on experiment.com, if you are a researcher at a university with a nonprofit arm, then we are able to add tax receipts for the backers if we partner directly with the university. Some independent scientists have also partnered with other nonprofits that act like their sponsors. And so in that way, they can also provide tax receipts to their backers.
Ethan, do you feel like this is going to allow you to compete as an indie scientist with all these big universities?
I believe so. I mean, from my perspective, I'm just trying to hybridize the best elements of a university lab and an industry lab, and just hoping that other people can follow this template.
How did you find lab spaces in Indie Scientist, though? That's one of the big costs to you, right?
It is. I mean, thankfully, we're in the Bay Area, and it's a hotbed of activity in tech and biotech, and there are these places called incubators where one can rent a lab bench for a certain amount of month, and it could start with simply one bench, and that's a way that someone can start with a very limited amount of money, say, you know, the $10,000 they raise on experiment.com, and then they allow themselves, you know, a month or two to do that validation step, and then they have something tangible they can shop around and then get more money.
Well, good luck in your ventures. Ethan Perlstein is an evolutionary pharmacologist, an independent scientist, and the founder of Perlstein Lab. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
And Cindy Wu is the co-founder of the crowdfunding website experiment.com. Thank you so much, Cindy.
Thanks, John.